Radchai have few qualms about killing humans, especially non-citizen humans. But you're very cautious about starting wars with aliens. Only because wars with aliens might run up against the terms of the treaty with the alien Presger. Violating that agreement would have extremely serious consequences. And even so, plenty of high-ranking Radchai disagreed on that topic. I saw Lieutenant Ahn's desire to argue the point. Instead, she said, "The governor of Ime wasn't cautious about it, and would have started that war if not for this one person." "Have they executed that person yet?" the head priest asked pointedly. It was the summary fate of any soldier who refused an order, let alone mutinied. "Last I heard," said Lieutenant Ahn, breath tight and turning shallow, "the Ur had agreed to turn her over to Rach authorities." She swallowed. "I don't know what's going to happen." Of course, it had probably already happened, whatever it was. News could take a year or more to reach Shaserna from as far away as Ime. The head priest didn't answer for a moment. She poured more tea and spooned fish paste into a small bowl. "Does my continued request for your presence present any sort of disadvantage for you?" "No," said Lieutenant Ahn. "Actually, the other Esk lieutenants are a bit envious. There's no chance for action on Justice of Turin." She picked up her own cup, outwardly calm, inwardly angry, disturbed. Talking about the news from Ime had increased her unease. "Action means commendations and possibly promotions." And this was the last annexation, the last chance for an officer to enrich her house through connections to new citizens, or even through outright appropriation. "Yet another reason I would prefer you," said the head priest. I followed Lieutenant Ahn home and watched inside the temple and overlooked the people crisscrossing the plaza as they always did, avoiding the children playing cow in the center of the plaza, kicking the ball back and forth, shouting and laughing. On the edge of the four-temple water, a teenager from the upper city sat sullen and listless, watching half a dozen little children hopping from stone to stone, singing.
"One, two, my aunt told me. 3, 4, the corpse soldier. 5, 6, it'll shoot you in the eye. 7, 8, kill you dead. 9, 10, break it apart and put it back together."
As I walked the streets, people greeted me and I greeted them in return. Lieutenant Ahn was tense and angry and only nodded absently at the people in the street, who greeted her as she passed. The person with the fishing rights complaint left, unsatisfied. Two children rounded the divider after she had gone and sat cross-legged on the cushion she had vacated. They both wore lengths of fabric wrapped around their waists, clean but faded, though no gloves. The elder was about 9, and the symbols inked on the younger one's chest and shoulders, slightly smudged, indicated she was no more than 6. She looked at me, frowning. In Orzean, addressing children properly was easier than addressing adults. One used a simple, ungendered form. "Hello, citizens," I said in the local dialect. I recognized them both. They lived on the south edge of Orz, and I had spoken to them quite frequently. But they had never visited the house before. "How can I help you?"
"You aren't one, Ask," said the smaller child, and the older made an abortive motion, as if to hush her.
"I am," I said, and pointed to the insignia on my uniform jacket. "See? Only this is my number 14 segment."
"I told you," said the older child.
The younger considered this for a moment and then said,
"I have a song."
I waited in silence, and she took a deep breath, as though about to begin, and then halted, perplexed seeming.
"Do you want to hear it?"
she asked, still doubtful of my identity, likely. "Yes, citizen," I said. I, that is, I-1-esque, first sang to amuse one of my lieutenants when Justice of Torin had hardly been commissioned 100 years. She enjoyed music and had brought an instrument with her as part of her luggage allowance. She could never interest the other officers in her hobby, and so she taught me the parts to the song she played. I filed those away and went looking for more to please her. By the time she was captain of her own ship, I had collected a large library of vocal music. No one was going to give me an instrument, but I could sing any time. And it was a matter of rumor and some indulgent smiles that Justice of Torin had an interest in singing. Which it didn't. I, Justice of Torin, tolerated the habit because it was harmless, and because it was quite possible that one of my captains would appreciate it. Otherwise, it would have been prevented. If these children had stopped me on the street, they would have had no hesitation. But here in the house, seated as though for a formal conference, things were different, and I suspected this was an exploratory visit that the youngest child meant to eventually ask for a chance to serve in the house's makeshift temple. The prestige of being appointed flower-bearer to Amat wasn't a question here, in the strongest hold of Ikt, but the customary term-end gift of fruit and clothing was. And this child's best friend was currently a flower-bearer, doubtless making the prospect more interesting. No Orzian would make such a request immediately or directly, so likely the child had chosen this oblique approach, turning a casual encounter into something formal and intimidating. I reached into my jacket pocket and pulled out a handful of sweets and laid them on the floor between us. The little girl made an affirmative gesture, as though I had resolved all her doubts, and then took a breath and began.
"My heart is a fish hiding in the water grass. In the green, in the green."
The tune was an odd amalgam of a Rodchai song that played occasionally on broadcast and an Orzian one I already knew. The words were unfamiliar to me. She sang 4 verses in a clear, slightly wavering voice and seemed ready to launch into a fifth, but stopped abruptly when Lieutenant On's steps sounded outside the divider. The smaller girl leaned forward and scooped up her payment. Both children bowed, still half-seated, and then rose and ran out the entranceway into the wider house, past Lieutenant On, past me following Lieutenant On.
"Thank you, citizens," Lieutenant On said to their retreating backs,
and they started, and then managed with a single movement to both bow slightly in her direction and continue running out into the street.
"Anything new?"
asked Lieutenant On, though she didn't pay much attention to music herself, not beyond what most people do.
"Sort of," I said.
Farther down the street, I saw the 2 children, still running, as they turned a corner around another house. They slowed to a halt, breathing hard. The littler girl opened her hand to show the older one her fistful of sweets. Surprisingly, she seemed not to have dropped any, small as her hand was, as quick as their flight had been. The older child took a sweet and put it in her mouth. 5 years ago, I would have offered something more nutritious. Before repairs had begun to the planet's infrastructure, when supplies were chancy. Now every citizen was guaranteed enough to eat, but the rations weren't luxurious and often as not were unappealing. Inside the temple, all was green-lit silence. The head priest didn't emerge from behind the screens in the temple residence, though junior priests came and went. Lieutenant Awn went to the second floor of her house and sat brooding on an oars-style cushion. Screened from the street, shirt thrown off. She refused the genuine tea I brought her. I transmitted a steady stream of information to her. Everything normal, everything routine. And to Justice of Torin. She should take that to the district magistrate, Lieutenant Awn said of the citizen with a fishing dispute, slightly annoyed, eyes closed, the afternoon's reports in her vision. We don't have jurisdiction over that. I didn't answer. No answer was required or expected. She approved with a quick twitch of her fingers the message I had composed for the district magistrate, and then opened the most recent message from her young sister. Lieutenant Awn sent a percentage of her earnings home to her parents, who used it to buy their younger child poetry lessons. Poetry was a valuable, civilized accomplishment. I couldn't judge if Lieutenant Awn's sister had any particular talent, but then not many did, even among more elevated families. But her work and her letters pleased Lieutenant Awn and took the edge off her present distress. The children on the plaza ran away home, laughing. The adolescent sighed heavily, the way adolescents do, and dropped a pebble in the water and stared at the ripples. Ancillary units that only ever woke for annexations often wore nothing but a force shield generated by an implant in each body, rank on rank of featureless soldiers that might have been poured from Mercury. But I was always out of the holds, and I wore the same uniform human soldiers did, now the fighting was done. My body sweated under my uniform jackets, and, bored, I opened three of my mouths, all in close proximity to each other on the Temple Plaza, and sang with those three voices. My heart is a fish, hiding in the water grass. One person walking by looked at me, startled, but everyone else ignored me. They were used to me by now. Chapter 3. The next morning, the correctives had fallen off, and the bruising on Savarden's face had faded. She seemed comfortable, but she still seemed high, so that was hardly surprising. I unrolled the bundle of clothes I had bought for her, insulated underclothes, quilted shirt and trousers, undercoat and hooded overcoat, gloves, and laid them out. Then I took her chin and turned her head toward me. Can you hear me? Yes. Her dark brown eyes stared somewhere distant over my left shoulder. Get up. I tugged on her arm, and she blinked lazily and got as far as sitting up before the impulse deserted her. But I managed to dress her in fits and starts, and then I stowed what few things were still out, shouldered my pack, took Savarden by the arm, and left. There was a flyer rental at the edge of town, and predictably, the proprietor wouldn't rent to me unless I put down twice the advertised deposit. I told her I intended to fly northwest to visit a herding camp. An outright lie, which she likely knew.
You're an off-worlder, she said. You don't know what it's like away from the towns. Off-worlders are always flying out to herding camps and getting lost. Sometimes we find them again, sometimes not.
I said nothing.
You'll lose my flyer, and then where will I be? Out in the snow with my starving children, that's where.
Beside me, Savarden stared vaguely off into the distance. I was forced to put down the money. I had a strong suspicion I would never see it again. Then the proprietor demanded extra because I couldn't display a local pilot certification. Something I knew wasn't required. If it had been, I would have forged one before I came.
In the end, though, she gave me the flyer.